Thank you. So, first I'd like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's nice to be back here. Second, I'd like to change the title of my talk. So this is the original title. But I'd like to speak about equilibrium states in stellar and galactic dynamics, a little bit more broader context than just about the fluids. So, most I have to say is based on two older papers which deal with fluids. And there's a more recent paper by Anne Randall, Klaus Ugler, and myself, which deals with laws of matter, and is therefore concerned with galactic dynamics or statics. So, my talk will come in two parts. First, I'll deal with the fluids, so I'll discuss equilibrium states and stellar dynamics. But here I'll focus on the relativistic case only. So I'll deal with static solutions of the Euler-Einstein system. And in the second part of my talk, I'll discuss equilibrium states and galactic dynamics. But here I'll focus on the non-relativistic case. So I will talk about stationary solutions of the Vlasov-Poisson system. Okay, let's begin with part one. Often when people talk about static perfect fluids, they begin by writing down the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation. But here somehow I would like to give the background story. So I want to show, so to speak, how one gets there. So what we start with is a space-time M here and a Lorentzian metric, and we assume that the matter content is a perfect fluid with the energy-momentum tensor of the usual form. So we have a density rho here and a pressure P. So henceforth, and this is the most important assumption in the whole talk, we assume the space-time to be static. Moreover, minor assumptions, I mean, we want to be chronological, of course, and the Killing orbits of the static Killing vector should be complete. Under these assumptions, the manifold M is a product of the real numbers times some free space, and the metric has this form here, so it's a function V times dt plus phi I d I squared plus some spatial free metric, where this function phi is, sorry, the one form phi is closed here, and this is due to the staticity. Okay, let's get more information on the metric. We can use the following theorem here for the statement. When we assume a space-time that is geodesically complete, globally hyperbolic, with a Cauchy hypersurface that is asymptotically flat, and when we assume that the matter satisfies the weak energy condition, which is no problem in our case, since we will always assume that the density and the pressure are positive. So when we assume that, then the three space here is simply connected. And in our case, we consider here, this implies automatically that this one form here is exact. And we can redefine our time coordinate here such that the metric gets this usual form, which we recognize as static metrics. Okay. But we want to know even more about the topology of the, well, it's dirty. About the topology of the three space. And for that, we use a theorem which is due to Massoud Oulalam. If we have a
just to remark, you don't need geodesic complete for the previous result. Is that
here you mean?
Yeah, you don't need.
It's. Are you sure? No. I mean, this is independent of what I'm saying here. So this is a theorem of its own. So geodesic completeness here is okay, but if I start, so this is a theorem by itself.
Maybe we can talk about it later.
Okay. So. Okay. Okay, the following theory by Masoud Ulala. If we have a perfect fluid space-time, which is just geodesically complete, globally hyperbolic, asymptotically flat and static, and if we further assume the strong energy condition and that the fluid is coming in one connected region, it follows then that the spatial part of the manifold is already the R3. So in other words, the space-time of isolated regular static stellar models is R cross R3. Okay, if we have that, then we can simply write down the Einstein equations together with the equations of the fluid. And what we get is the Euler-Einstein system for static perfect fluids. You don't have to remember that, of course. So let me just point to the following. If there is if there's a row appearing here on the right-hand side, then we understand it as a function of P. So we always prescribe a barotropic equation of state to make the system closed. Solutions of that system, either...
When you're saying starting, you're assuming that V is strictly positive, is it?
Yes. Solutions of the system either satisfy that pressure is always positive, or there exists a surface where P vanishes, and beyond such a surface, it would continue the solution as a vacuum solution, and we would do that by standard junction conditions. Okay, the next theorem, which I want to cite here, is very important. It has been mentioned already yesterday by Bobby Baik in his talk, and it's also due to Bobby Baik and to Walter Simon. It's important because we make contact with spherical symmetry here. So what we assume is an equation of state that satisfies some strange differential inequality, which looks like that here. And we consider a solution of the Euler-Einstein system, static system, which has a compact support and which is regular. And it then follows that this solution, and of course then the space-time it generates, is spherically symmetric. In other words, the space-time of compactly supported regular static stellar models is spherically symmetric, or in brief, staticity implies spherical symmetry under these other assumptions we have. Let me remind you or say that this is still a conjecture for general equations of state, which is unsatisfactory from a physical point of view because we would expect all static models to be spherically symmetric. Not just those that satisfy this quite strange condition, which is satisfied for some equations of state, but for some physical equations of state, it seems to be violated. Okay. I can keep it here. Okay, so since we have shown now that it's reasonable at least to consider spherical symmetry, we'll always stick to that. So we assume our space-time always to be static and spherically symmetric. And since we do that, we can drop some of the minor assumptions we made in the before. So I don't any longer assume regularity or asymptotic flatness here. Only those two things, that is the spherical symmetry. So the space-time under these assumptions is a product of R cross some radial interval cross an S2, where the radial interval can be essentially anything a priori. And the metric is spherically symmetric, so there's two functions, the TT component and the RR component. We can choose that. We've also showed that, but this can be done. Where the phi we call a potential here, and instead of this e to the 2 lambda, we introduce the mass function. So via this well-known factor. And with these variables, the static Euler-Einstein system reduces to the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff system, or the TOF equations, which is an equation for M and an equation for P, and the equation for phi decouples here. As before, the equations are understood in connection with the barotropic equation of state, which is some function rho of P. So one might think this is very nice, but there are some problems connected to the to these equations here. First, there's a 1 over r term appearing on the right-hand side of the equations. Why is this bad? Of course, there's most interesting solutions that possess a regular center. And the idea is here, of course, to prescribe some initial data, some data like central pressure or central density or something. But what we want to do here, so, is to prescribe a data point at the center where the ODE is singular. So it's not trivial here actually to prove existence and uniqueness of solutions and to prescribe it with to prescribe the data at the singular point. A second problem is connected to the factor 1 minus 2m over r, which comes in the power to the minus 1 here. It is clear that for the maximal interval of existence for solutions, this function will be positive. But I mean, this is not the point. What we want here is, what we have to have here is that the maximal interval of existence must contain the support of the pressure function. So this is known under the slogan, P must vanish before the factor 1 minus 2m over r. This is because if the solution ceases to exist somewhere before P is zero, we have no chance of somehow joining a vacuum solution to this solution in the exterior. Fortunately, the problems have been dealt with, and like 10 years ago, Bernd Schmidt and Alan Wren have proved that everything is fine, so you can actually prescribe the initial data at the singular point. And P actually vanishes before this factor. At least they've shown it for regular solutions. So, given that, the picture is now the following. A solution for this TOF system gives rise to a perfect fluid spacetime, r cross some radial interval cross 2, where the radial interval is now defined only by the properties of the pressure function. So either the lower boundary, the lower is zero here, or it's finite, but then the pressure is zero there. And analogously, either the RB is infinity, or it's finite, but then the pressure is zero there. And we would join a Schwarzschild solution to this perfect fluid solution at this point. Okay, a regular solution with complex support would have zero to some finite value of R here. Okay, the third problem that is connected with the TOF equation is maybe not so evident. On the right-hand side, there is the function rho. Rho is a function of P, and for all equations of state, physicists want to consider, d rho by dp explodes when p goes to zero. So the right-hand side is not differentiable at p equals zero. And this makes analysis of the solution space and its properties quite difficult. And so, in a sense, this is the most serious problem because it interferes with the main aim of the whole analysis. What we want to do here is we want to describe the solution space and its properties independent of the equation of state of the fluid. So like what properties of the fluid cause which properties of the matter. So ideally we would have theorems like if the equation of state is such and such, then say the total mass of the star is this and that. Or with the total radius, we would like to know about asymptotics or mass radius diagrams, things like that, all independent of the properties of the equation of state. Okay, so in the following, since I claim here that this is difficult with the TOF equation, I'll show that this is quite straightforward and easy and nice if one goes over to a new formulation of the problem here, to a dynamical systems formulation. So I will briefly show that the problems 1 and 2 just disappear somehow, and the qualitative analysis of the solution space and its properties becomes much simpler. Okay, the basis of the dynamical systems formulation is the choice of new variables. We make a variable transformation from the variables we had before, which is P, R, and M, to three new variables, which we call U, V, and Omega. Over here, this is two steps. I don't want to bore you here with the details of this variable transformation, so I'll just say two things here. First, the variables we consider are bounded variables. All variables range in interval 0, 1. So the state space of the problem now is a cube, a unit cube. And second, the new independent variable we have is still some kind of radial variable. It's essentially connected to the logarithm of R. In particular, it's still monotonically increasing, and under the right circumstances, if lambda goes to minus infinity, R goes to 0, and if lambda goes to infinity, R goes to infinity. Using these new variables, the TOF system becomes much nicer. It doesn't look like it at the beginning, but what we get here is a regular, autonomous, three-dimensional system of ordinary differential equations on a state space with compact closure. So that's how it looks like. Also here, you don't have to know the details, of course. Let me remind you again that the independent variable is still some radial variable. The new variable omega here is a new pressure. It's, so to speak, the height in the cube. So you have the unit cube, and omega is the said variable. And it's a measure for the pressure. These are some abbreviations here. But a very important fact here is how the equation of state enters the right-hand side of the system. So in the TOF equation, which is no longer here, it was really the equation of state itself that was on the right-hand side. Here it's some derived quantities that appear, namely the quantity epsilon, which is here and here, which is the logarithmic derivative of the equation of state, and there's also the ratio, which appears here and here in this quantity. Okay. So we have this state space, which is a unit cube. We have the equations. And what's a perfect fluid solution, this formulation? It's just an orbit in this unit cube. These are three examples of orbits, how they can look like. So what is quite evident here from the system is that it is just polynomial in the variables U and V. So it's straightforward to extend the system from the open cube, from the interior of the cube, to also include the side faces, so that we obtain still a regular autonomous system now on the cube which includes the side faces. And why should one do that? Because on the side faces, suddenly there appear fixed points. The fixed points are the basic ingredients of the theory of dynamical systems, I would say. Actually, there are three lines of fixed points. So every point on these lines is one fixed point. And one can do, of course, the standard analysis of dynamical systems. So we can make the local analysis and ask what these fixed points are. And one finds that fixed points here are sources, and fixed points on L2 and L3 are saddles. Yeah, like that. So,
do you think you could put the definition of the variables again somewhere?
Yes, of course. So I said that the problems that are connected to the Toff equation system are easily dealt with here in this formalism without resorting to complicated theorems or proofs. First, the first problem, which was connected to the 1 over r term, the Toff equations, and to the problem of prescribing data at the center. Here, the question of existence and uniqueness is trivial. I mean, it's an autonomous system regular of ODEs, so this is not an issue at all. So the only thing one has to find out is what the regular solutions correspond to in this picture here. We want to talk about regular solutions also here somehow. So what are these? And it's a quite basic observation here. So what we can do by normal dynamical systems analysis is to see that each fixed point on this line of fixed points here has exactly one orbit that originates from it into the interior of the cube. I think I had one example here. So like in the example here. So there is one orbit from this line here going into interior. And just undoing the variable transform, it's quite easy to find that along this orbit that goes to L2 as lambda, the variable goes to minus infinity, along that orbit the radius goes to zero, mass goes to zero, and the pressure goes to some constant value. But that means that this is a regular solution. So a regular solution, a regular perfect fluid solution, a solution with regular center in the normal picture with initial data central pressure at the center corresponds to an orbit that originates from one of the points on this line. And clearly this is a one parameter family of solutions here. So there's no problem here. So you know what the regular solutions are, and the existence of those solutions is clear. Second,
where can you see the boundary of the fluid of this diagram? Which orbits can you just
what the boundary itself means?
Yes. So p equals zero, right? Is that the boundary of your fluid?
P equals zero is not at the moment not the boundary, but it will be. I'll show you. It will be the bottom of the cube, and this will play an important role later. But the side faces here, I think one of them can be interpreted as vacuum solutions. But the variable transform doesn't make sense on the side faces. That's just a typical trick in dynamical systems. Mm-hmm. When a system can be extended, you just do it because fixed points typically lie on invariant subsets. I mean, they must. So this is very convenient here. It's not so deep in this respect. Okay, the second issue was the issue whether the factor 1 minus 2m over r vanished or not before p. So by simply looking at the variable transformation, one sees that the factor here is always bigger than zero, so this is no problem. But what we must show is that the pressure, which is here, this variable omega, which is this new pressure variable, which was the height in the cube. So what we want to show is that this omega vanishes before this factor does. And this can be done quite easily. So by looking at the questions, wherever they are, oops, I'm all over here, that's bad. So, I've lost my equations, but let me just tell you what you should see there. The function omega is monotonic. So that in a dynamical system, so it's monotonic almost everywhere. Only on omega is 0 and 1, and on one side plate it isn't. And the basic theory of dynamical systems entails that the omega limit of an interior orbit is located either here or here, on one on the bottom or on the side face.
Omega is essentially the pressure.
It's essentially the pressure. It's monotonic in the pressure. If pressure is 0, omega is 0. If pressure is infinity, then omega is 1. But, so we have the two choices here. But it's quite easy to see that on this face such as here, when one looks at the fixed point, that those are either saddles or sources, and they don't attract orbits. So this leaves just omega equals 0 as a possibility. So all orbits satisfy that omega goes to 0 as lambda goes to infinity, while this factor, by definition, remains positive. So the pressure actually vanishes before the factor, and there is no problem here in this formalism. Just doesn't occur, this problem. Okay, let me make more of these translations of one picture to the other. An important issue with perfect fluids is the Buchner inequality, which tells something about what the mass and radius can be for set of perfect fluid solutions, namely 2 times, if you want, plug in p equals 0 here, which is the surface of the star. So 2 total mass over total radius of the star is less or equal than 8 over 9. So this inequality here is represented in the state space picture as a surface. As the surface, by the way. Solutions that are on one side of the surface satisfy the inequality. Solutions that are on the other side of the surface violate the inequality. Moreover, and that's the interesting thing here, this surface is semi-permeable, meaning that solutions that are on the good side cannot pass through the surface to the bad side. Since the regular solutions start out at the good side, they will always remain at the good side, because they cannot pass through the surface to the bad side. So that's the proof. That's it. It's quite short.
Sorry, why isn't it impermeable?
Why is it the case that it is
semi-permeable? You said it's semi-permeable.
Yes.
They go from the bad side to the good side.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So they can only go from the bad side to the good side. So if you start out on the good side, then you're done. Meaning that the equation is satisfied for all regular solutions. Okay, I'll specialize now a little bit. I have to say something about the equations of state. So far, everything was independent of the actual equation of state. But now I want to introduce a large class of asymptotically polytropic equations of state, which are modeled on the polytropes, which most of you might be familiar with, which is just this normal power law here. So the density is a constant times the pressure to some exponent, and this exponent epsilon here is a constant between 0 and 1. Usually one writes it down with the polytropic index, which is n over n plus 1. And the polytropic index then can vary between 0 and infinity. So the idea is here to view an equation of state, a general equation of state, as a varying polytrope. And one defines here kind of a polytropic index function. So when one looks like what does the equation of state locally look like? Which polytope does it resemble locally? And yeah, this is some function and gives an equation state like that, but it's still general. So if the function is constant, we get back the polytropes, of course. So asymptotic polytropes are equations of state that are general in the middle, but are special at the ends. At one end, at both ends, at both ends, they look like polytropes to first order. So if p goes to 0, rho of p looks asymptotically like k to the p of power, some asymptotic constant, and analogously for the high pressure end. And this asymptotic index here is of crucial importance, as you will see. You might want to know probably why should we look at asymptotically polytropic equations of state, and the answer probably is that that's all what astrophysicists look at. All equations of state they consider are of that type. And this gives an explanation why the analysis is easier in a dynamical systems formulation. So in the Toff equation, just to remind you, you had the problem that the equation of state entered directly on the right-hand side. And this was bad because the derivative of this function, rho of p, diverged as this t went to 0. So here, in the dynamical systems formulation, in contrast, only the derived quantities sigma and epsilon appear on the right-hand side of the dynamical system. And by just doing simple calculation, we'll see that the sigma goes to 0 and the epsilon goes, by assumption here, to a constant if the pressure goes to 0. So even more, we can choose this new pressure variable in a way that all derivatives of the quantities vanish. So this somehow makes it possible to apply all of the dynamical systems techniques. So what we get here now is a system that also includes the top and the bottom of the state space, and suddenly there pop up lots of fixed points that all mean something. In formal terms, for asymptotically polytropic equations, let's say the right-hand side of the dynamical system extends smoothly also to the top and the bottom. So we can now really consider the whole closed unit cube as the space-time, as the state space. Not as the space-time, this was the trend. All phases, of course, are invariant, and fixed points are all located there. So this makes it quite straightforward now to apply dynamical systems techniques, because we know already quite a lot. I don't go into details here. I just say that the fixed points, properties, the location, and the facts, whether they are attractors or sources, saddles, whatever, depends not on the whole equation of state, but only on the asymptotic properties of the equation of state. So that's where these asymptotic indices, polytropic indices, enter. Here, for example, is N0. And why is this interesting to know? Because the fixed points play a major role here. We had already before, I've tried to convince you of the fact that solutions that converge to the line of fixed point L2 are the regular solutions in the normal space-time picture. And similarly, for all fixed points, there exists a characteristic behavior. So if an orbit goes to some fixed point, this means some characteristic asymptotics for the corresponding perfect fluid solution. Here's the complete list of possible asymptotics, which is, in a sense, already a not a theorem, but at least a proposition. So you can at least list all possible asymptotic ways of perfect fluid solutions. So we had L2 here. This was the regular center. very important, the B2 corresponds to perfect fluid solutions that are finitely extended, whose mass and whose radius is finite. So again, all solutions that go, what's it, B2, to the fixed point B2 correspond to solutions, if one makes the transformation back, that are of finite mass and radius. Other things. So B1 corresponds to solutions that extend to infinity and have finite total mass. And B4 are those that extend to infinity and have a diverging mass function. What L1 corresponds to, I suppress here, but I'll say what T3 corresponds to. These are solutions with a non-regular center, so rho behaves like r to the minus 2, where it's r goes to 0. There are some fixed points left over. They don't matter, they're settled. Nothing converges to those fixed points.
Where is the Buchta surface in this picture? It's
the Buchta surface extends from this part here over to L1, essentially.
So T1 and T2 will be actually on the wrong side of the Buchta surface?
T1 and T2 don't matter so much anyway, because there is no solution going there. But B1, for example, So B1, for example, is on the good side, and B4 is also on the good side, I think.
And is this now that every orbit will actually approach a phase?
That's a theorem, yeah. I don't show the proof. I've written it up, but okay. I think I don't show the proof here.
So where is Walter's
But this is an equation of state. This is not so. What
solutions correspond?
These are This depends now. So, what you always have to prescribe here is an equation of state. So this is a picture actually, which holds for one particular equation of state, say. And as I said, the location of the fixed point and some fixed points and some of their properties depend on the equation of state. So if you choose Walter's moon to the balloon equation of state, you will find that this fixed point is absent, as well as this fixed point here when the asymptotic index is small enough. So Walter had this family of equation of state. So he could also have one parameter, and then you just follow and say increase the parameter and see what happens to the fixed points here, and you can then see, I think, if the index was small enough, you can easily prove here that you can reproduce the result that they were all finitely extended then for the regular solutions for some range of the parameter there. But I can show this in detail, but this is not so difficult, I think. Okay, I just put the theorem up because it was a question here. So you can show here that only the fixed points matter. There's no strange things going on somewhere which like periodic orbits or heteroclinic cycles or something that would somehow attract orbits or something. Which is surprising. No, it's not surprising. I think it should be like that also, if one thinks about it from the physical point of view. I just to give you a flavor of how flows look. These are slices in the cube, and depending on what the index is, the flow can look quite strange here.
Question about the fact that the list is complete. You mentioned that for some equations of state, some of the fixed points vanish. Mm-hmm. And how do you know that for any conceivable equation of state you have, you found all the fixed points roughly?
I mean, finding the fixed points is straightforward. I mean, you look at the right hand side of the equations and you ask when it vanishes.
Yes.
And I mean, the question makes sense, of course, if the dependence of the right hand side is very complicated, the dependence on the equation of state. So the right hand side contains the equation of state. And in the TOF equation itself, some things like that wouldn't work because the equation of state itself isn't there. The dynamical system, you have these derived quantities of the equation of state which appear on the right hand side. And it turns out that only this asymptotic polytropic index determines where the fixed points are. And this is quite straightforward to calculate. So, half a page calculation of, okay, mathematical calculation of better fixed points. Okay, some flows here. Where was I? Yeah, okay. I'll just leave that here and give a short summary of some results. So based on all these techniques, dynamical systems, center manifold theory and stuff, you can get some of the desired theorems of the theorems of the type, if the equation state is such and such, then this and that happens. So finite masses and radii. So we consider an equation of state that is asymptotically polytropic for low pressures, and the asymptotic index should be less or equal to 3. Then all associated perfect fluid solutions, whether they're regular or non-regular, doesn't matter here, possess finite masses and radii. I don't give the proof here, but yeah. So what does this mean? It means that whatever the equation of state is for higher pressures, whatever the meta properties are there, as long as it's behaved in a particular way towards zero, you have guaranteed finite masses and radii. Okay. But one can extend this in a sense. In here, if one has control of the equation of state for a large interval, not only asymptotically as p goes to zero, right here. So if we know that this index function is less than 5 for at least some interval, and some additional condition on the signal, which is satisfied almost always, then also here the regular solutions, which have a central pressure less than this number where this inequality is violated, then all those solutions have finite radii and therefore finite masses. In a sense, this generalizes what one knew for the exact polytropes. For the exact polytropes, one knew that the configuration is finitely extended if the index, which is constant there, is less than five.
You mean the Newtonian polytropes?
Yes. There are, I should say that the inverse is also true. The inverse being that if the index is too big all the time, meaning bigger than five all the time, then the configurations will extend to infinity and have infinite masses. The proofs are quite simple, so that's, I mean, the advantage also, I mean, here it's not so difficult to get the statements of the proofs. Okay, other theorems include things like the spiral structure of the mass radius diagram. So one can prove here that essentially, for all equations of state, there will be a spiral in the mass radius diagram. Why is it interesting? This is interesting for physical reasons. So if one has a spiral here, then one is guaranteed that there's a maximum mass, a maximum, I mean, this is a bad example here, but this, because it's different. But one is guaranteed a maximum mass and maximum radius for configurations. So you cannot go through all points in the mass radius diagram. And it's also interesting from this point of view of the theorem by Bobby Baik and Walter Simon, which deals with the spherical symmetry of solutions, because there an important quantity that enters in this proof is the surface potential, essentially. So the ratio of M over R. And if there's a spiral, there will be, for one ratio, there will be many configurations that achieve this ratio. Because, like, you have fixed ratio, meaning one straight line here, and this cuts through many points in the spiral. And only when this is unique, the intersection point, then the theorem has a has a chance to hold. That's where this inequality comes from, partly. The inequality in this theorem. Okay, I think I'll skip this and say something briefly about the second part here about collision as matter. So what I say here is the non-relativistic case. So I want to say a little bit about equilibrium states of non-relativistic collisionless matter. So we consider a collisionless gas of particles that interact by the Newtonian gravitational field. So we investigate here the static laws of the stationary laws of Poisson system. In this theory, in this matter theory, the matter is described by a phase space mass density distribution, which is a function essentially on of x and v, where x is space and v is the velocity. So it encodes the information of how many particles there are at a certain space point x and with a particular velocity v. These distribution functions that they're called give rise to a spatial mass density, which is just integral over the velocities at a certain point of the distribution function. And when we couple it to gravity, to Newtonian gravity, we have the Newtonian potential and Poisson's equation. We assume here that the distribution function is spherically symmetric, which means that it is invariant under simultaneous rotations in x and v. And this symmetry is inherited, of course, by the density and therefore also by the potential. So the Poisson equation becomes also spherically symmetric, like that here. To close the system, we have only to give one more equation, namely the equation f satisfies the distribution function, and this is the Vlasov equation here in the time-independent case. And fortunately, in the static spherically symmetric case we are dealing with here, this equation can be solved explicitly. To do that, we define an energy per unit mass and particle in a normal way, like kinetic energy plus a potential energy, and we define the angular momentum squared, like that here. Further, we assume that there's a cutoff energy, E0, which means that we assume that there exist no particles with arbitrarily high energies. This makes a priori sense if we want to be able to get finite configurations. Okay, so one can easily see as well that this corresponds to the potential at the radius of support of the system, and one defines relative quantities, relative binding energies into relative potential, just the cutoff energy minus the true energy, and here the potential adds the boundary surface minus the actual potential. And given this, Jean's theorem states that F is a solution of the Vlasov equation if and only if it is a function of this energy here and the angular momentum squared. So we have solved for the Vlasov equation explicitly in the present context. By construction here, F is zero when this relative energy is negative, simply because, again, the cutoff. I mean, we assume here if E is bigger than E0, then there are no particles there. Okay, we can define a mass function in the usual way, as we had before, and then Poisson's equation becomes omega prime. It's minus m over r. I want to remind you that omega is the relative potential. So it's still a Poisson equation here, evidently. And one thing I should mention here, because it's important. So this is already the full system here. This is the Vlasov Poisson system. It depends, of course, on the chosen distribution function here. So we choose a distribution function. plug it into the formula for the spatial density and get something here, and then this system is closed and well defined. Yes. Okay. Sorry? Omega was this relative potential. So omega is still essentially the potential, the Newtonian potential. So it's some fixed number minus the potential. It's negative, actually. Let me give you the relationship to the top equation in the perfect fluids. So in the top equation, we had all the potential, but it was a decoupled equation. This one, namely, which caused, if we integrated the potential phi to be a function of the pressure. So I can, if I like, substitute the equation for the pressure in the top equation by an equation for the potential. And if I do that here and make the limit c going to infinity, then I just get the same equations here, look like the same. I mean, here is the gravitational constant explicitly included, but it doesn't matter. So it's essentially the same equations with one important difference. Here, in the context of perfect fluids, the function rho comes from the equation of state. So it's a function of p. Since I did the transformation from the pressure to the potential, it's now a function of the potential. So here I have a system, and the right-hand side contains a function of the potential p. Now, for Blasov-Poisson, this is no longer true. The function rho here is not a function of the potential alone, but it's a function of both the potential and the radius. So that's essentially the main difference between the collisionless matter and the fluids. Okay, the aims here are the same as in the fluid case. So we want to prescribe a distribution function of a certain type and see what properties there are for the configuration for the galaxy, so to speak, the collisionless matter models, what we find for masses, radii, asymptotics, whatever. Okay, this I just say briefly. So one can similarly introduce asymptotic quantities that characterize the distribution function, just as the asymptotic quantities like this polytropic index characterize the equation of state. So what we do here is we consider distribution functions of this particular kind and define again some kind of generalized polytropic index function. This is to remain in close analogy to the perfect fluids, mainly. But I don't say too much here. It's just, one again has some derived quantities derived from the actual distribution function, and those derived quantities again appear when we have a dynamical systems formulation, which I also just keep the derivation of. So again, we'll get the dynamical system here, and again, the quantities that appear on the right-hand side are not the distribution function itself, but there are derived quantities which are here again some kind of polytropic, generalized polytropic index function, and in addition some constant L here which comes from the ansatz of the distribution function here. Okay. And again, one can do similar things. One has a state space, which is a unit cube, looks quite similar, a little bit different, and the theorems also are lookalikes. For example, here one sees if this index function again satisfies some inequality, which is here 3 plus L, then one gets again finiteness of masses and radii, or here instead of 5, it's 5 plus 3 L, again one gets finiteness of mass and radius. Let me finish by just giving some examples here. These are the most prominent distribution functions astrophysicists look at. For example, King models, Woolley-Dickens models, Kempe-Gunn models. So these are all of this type, which is also this generalized polytropic type. Anyone can apply the theorems here and gets the statement that all these models yield galaxies with finite masses and finite radii.
What is theta?
Sorry?
Yeah.
Theta?
Theta.
Where is theta?
Oh, in
That's E. That's small e. E to the power of something.
Oh, sorry.
More interesting are these Wilson models, which are of the following type, again, some exponential function times some angular momentum part. And here the first theorem does no longer apply, but one has a second theorem, which is more interesting for the same reasons as the perfect fluids. One has a certain range where one is guaranteed finite masses and radii, but at a certain point the theorem fails. And one can then ask, of course, what happens when this theorem fails if I, for example, increase my central potential so much that it's no longer covered by the theorem. And then numerical investigations yield quite strange pictures. So, for example, one can get... where do I have it? Nowhere. Sorry. So, for example, one can get mass radius diagrams of the following type, or radius and pressure or potential diagrams of the following type. So one can get a continuum of solutions which has finite radii and masses, but there are discrete points for the central potential where the conjugation suddenly is infinitely extended and has
finite diagram.
Sorry?
What does this diagram represent?
So what you plot here is the central potential, and this is the total radius of the galaxy, so to speak. So you prescribe an equation of state, a distribution function of this type here, a Wilson model with some particular stranger value of L, and then you begin to look what the masses and radii of the configurations are. So you start out with So this is parameterized, the regular solutions, again, by the central value of the potential. And you start out with finiteness all the time. So the mass and the radius of the configuration is finite for the small values of the central potential. But suddenly, it decreases quite much.
And so is there a blow-up?
There is a blow-up in the sense if you consider the whole one-parameter family of solutions. So there is certain values of the central potential where the solution is no longer finitely extended. But then if you pass over this value, you still get finite.
And this dark thing in the middle is actually an accumulation point of this
type? It is. So these are all solutions which are finitely extended, but the mass is finite. But here there's an accumulation point where both the mass and the radius are infinite. So it's quite strange. And this happens actually to models that astrophysicists look at, so they should be careful. That is okay.
Thank you.
Are there further questions?
So what about Einstein, Glasser?
Probably in progress. Depends on a student of all kinds. I hope it's in progress. But essentially, it's not difficult because in the perfect fluids, so what we started out with originally, Glasser and myself, was the Newtonian case. And it was quite easy to generalize this for the relativistic case because the bottom of the cube, in the dynamical system formulation, the bottom of the cube still can be interpreted in a Newtonian way because it's small pressures. So that many of the theorems you derive in dynamical systems formulation depend on the behavior close to the bottom of the state space. So one can take over many results from the Newtonian theory to relativity. And one can easily see that. So I suppose by combining the variables we have for the relativistic polytropes, for the relativistic perfect fluids with the Newtonian Lasov case, one should get a similar behavior also for Lasov-Einstein. I'm quite sure.
Yeah.